Welcome to the Animus Podcast. Today we're going to be talking with Will Harvey and exploring his unorthodox path into life coaching. We're also going to be exploring his challenges with public speaking and how he overcame them, as well as looking at his new adventures of running workshops. So Will, it's great to have you here with us.
Thank you for having
me. On the Animus armchair, as it were. It feels like I haven't seen you in a while, so tell me what you've been up to.
It has been a while. What have I been up to? Well, I have been doing a lot of coaching, which is good. I've got a full client roster at the moment for the first time. I've had a full client roster now for about 6 months, which is exciting, but very busy. I took part in the Animus community lecture, as you know, which was, when was that, middle of March, something like that?
Yeah.
Which was a new experience for me. That's pretty much it, really. I'm balancing coaching with a day job still, as I have been since I started, so that keeps me pretty busy.
Okay, so let's jump in with that full roster of clients. So how many clients roughly are you working with now?
At any one time, it's sort of 12 to 15, but obviously with a full-time day job as well, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, that has its challenges.
So is that just evening sessions, or do you do weekends or anything like that?
No, I try to keep weekends sacred, just because my time during the week just gets completely absorbed, basically. Mm. And I've had to be really careful that doesn't sort of impact on my relationship and things like that. Because obviously when you work all day and then you tack on an hour or two of coaching every night as well,
Yeah. You
suddenly have no time, for yourself or for your relationship. And certainly I was not quite careful enough about that. In the sort of middle part of last year, and realised that I had to kind of readjust and make a really kind of conscious decision to build space in, if you like.
I suppose there's a real balancing act when you're in a full-time job and you've got a full practice of how do you, you know, have life and relationships and friendships in and around all of that.
It's a good question. I think really the answer to that is by being conscious of the need to do that. When I was winging it, as it were, I just being like, it'll all be fine, I'll just sort of do both and life will sort of work itself out. That's when the cracks started to show a bit, both for me personally and for my relationship as well. We realised that we were only seeing each other for short periods of time, and when we were, we were both tired and stressed and, shall we say, not our best selves. I realised that I had to change that. And you asked about weekends. I keep those completely sacred for exactly that reason. So they are kind of free time. And I'm sometimes tempted to break that rule because a lot of my clients, because of the kind of SEO stuff that the Life Coach Directory does, a lot of my clients are very local to me in Brixton, in southwest London, which means that quite often they say, I know we're just around the corner. Could we maybe do like a 10 a.m. Saturday session? And I think, well, that would be a lot easier than putting another session in on a Thursday night. No, I'm not going to do it because I need to kind of ring fence that time.
I think that's really interesting because I think for some coaches, or what I find interesting about that is that I recognise that other coaches will just let that kind of bleed into their weekends and not really have any boundaries around that. And I think that for new coaches especially, it's important to have really clear boundaries about when am I going to work and how's that going to impact on my life and my lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think actually it was a real, I mean, I'm learning, still learning these lessons as each kind of week goes by. But I sort of needed to make those mistakes to realise what I did and didn't want to do and what was and wasn't okay. And I was definitely guilty of that to begin with, of just winging it and saying, this will all be fine regardless of how I do it. And I'd chuck a session in for, like a phone coaching session in for 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning and think, oh, that's great because that's in the weekend and that gives me more space in the week. And then wake up on Saturday morning and think, do you know what? I've been doing this all week. I really need this time for me. Yeah. I really wish I didn't have this thing in the diary at 11 a.m. It'll be different for different people. And I guess it depends how good or otherwise you are at compartmentalising and going, well, it's just an hour and you can kind of shelve it. But for me, I am not good at that. I need to kind of compartmentalise more rigidly and go, this is my coaching and work time and this is my time for me and to chill out. And the other kind of good side of that, the other sort of side benefit, if you like, is that during that time that I have set aside, I'm then properly able to relax because it's time I've set aside for that purpose. So I find it much easier to go, do you know what? I've worked really hard during the week. For this next 2 days, I can do nothing if I don't want to.
Yeah, so it kind of gives you permission to really be present in the over the weekend of relaxing and with friends and family and partners and stuff.
Exactly that, yeah.
And you mentioned a bit before that you took part in the Animus Community Lecture. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
That was an interesting journey for me, actually, because Zoe Spooner got in touch with me and asked me to do it. And I felt enormous resistance to doing it. I mean, it's huge. To the point where I said, I said to her, look, I'm going to have to think about it. And I took about 2 days to get back to her, and she sort of chased me up. She was like, you know, if you're not going to do it, I need to ask somebody else. Fair enough. And I sort of always knew right at the back of my head that I was going to say yes, because I'd be an idiot to say no. But I had to sort of go through that little journey of, I'm really scared of doing this. So maybe I shouldn't do it, but no, because if you run away from these things, you're not actually going to progress any further. So I sort of eventually came around to it, and then I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. but I was sort of never in any doubt that I would say yes, but I needed to go through that period of pushing myself past the fear of doing it, because I have pretty much zero public speaking experience other than a couple of best man speeches, and they are obviously slightly different, slightly different dynamic. It was a very new thing for me.
And so how was it on the night itself?
On the night itself, I was oddly calm. Don't know why. I got myself in a real state about it for about the 6 weeks beforehand, ever since I agreed, from the point where I agreed to do it up until the actual day. It dominated my life. I don't know if you've ever had one of those things in your life where you've got something on the horizon and you sort of can't see past it until it's done.
Yeah.
So someone will go, oh, are you free on this day? And you're like, I can't think about it, because of this I've got to get done first. On the day I was surprised by myself, actually, because I arrived and I was a little bit nervous, and I was also incredibly early, which didn't help. So I had a good 2 hours of just sort of wandering around with time to kill, which is not a great way to manage your nerves, so apparently. But then I found as soon as I was a little bit nervous, and then as soon as who went first? I think it was Ross went first. Yeah, Ross, as soon as Ross started speaking, for some reason, I just sort of completely calmed down. I was like, this is going to be fine. I don't know why. I'd been rationalizing in my head for the previous sort of week that it's a very, very friendly crowd. I mean, you know better than anyone, a group of Animas coaches is just about the friendliest crowd of people you can hope for. So it's not a difficult audience, hopefully. But I sort of rationalized all these things. And then as soon as Ross started speaking, I was like, actually, all those things you told yourself are true. Like, it's going to be fine. And then actually the really surprising thing about it was I was expecting to stand up and have to sort of grind my way through it, force myself from start to finish, and then finish at the end and go off and drink 3 pints immediately. But I really loved it. As soon as a couple of minutes in, and when I sort of settled into it a little bit, I really, really enjoyed it. Don't know why, but I loved it.
That's really interesting. I suppose that something we can reflect on when we're working with our clients around when there's something big on the horizon, how much anxiety we can create, or how many stories or whatever that is that we can create around that. And then we're actually doing it. We can actually go, wait, this is okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my favorite books is Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And that was a really good embodiment of everything that book says, which is terrified by it. And it only has power over you if you don't then do it, if you run away from it. Mm. And as soon as you do the thing that you're scared of, it no longer has that power over you. I think that book is an interesting one, because the sort of whole thrust of it is the title. That's kind of the book.
Yeah.
Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Like, you sort of don't need to read it, except that the bit that really hit home for me was the cost, which is beautifully described in the book, is the cost of not doing these things. So we all know that we should go and confront the things that we're scared of, and we'll be better once we've got the other side of them. But I think the thing that hadn't really hit home for me before is the true cost of not doing those things, and how you then end up living your life. And if there are enough things that you're scared of that you run away from or don't do, then they begin to have so much power over you that you begin to, I think, you begin to almost make a habit of running away from things that you're a little bit scared of or have some little bit of resistance to. And you end up quite powerless in a way.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think everybody recognises that they are running away or that these things have power over them. They think that that's just the way it is. And I think that's one of the great things about coaching, is it allows us to bring that into their consciousness, bring it into awareness, sort of explore what are we running away from, what are we avoiding?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I have run away from I don't know how many public speaking things in the past, big and small. I mean, not huge, but definitely a range of different stuff, whether it be speaking in front of a group of employees at work, whatever. I'd always find a reason not to do it.
Mm.
Like, you know, I'm too busy, or there's someone else that's better to do it, actually. I'd always find someone who's better at doing it. Actually, I think you're a much better fit for this.
So what was the difference in this one, then?
I think it was the fact that coaching is the thing that I have decided to kind of redirect myself towards. My previous job was something I sort of, or my, not my previous job, my day job, the job I still have, or career, is something I fell into without any real kind of consciousness and then did quite well at, and never really stopped to wonder whether or not I was doing the thing I wanted to be doing. And I think that's true of a lot of people, actually. It seems to be quite a familiar story.
Mm.
Whereas coaching was a conscious choice. I found this thing that I really, really wanted to do and started doing it. And I just thought, when I got offered that opportunity, A, you've been asked, which is really flattering to be asked to do that at all. So for that reason, it felt wrong to turn it down. And B, it just felt like a really great environment to push myself through that fear. It being a friendly place, it being in the arena of stuff that I want to talk about and I'm comfortable talking about and happy to talk about. I mean, they had to shut me up on the night because I would have gone all night because I was really in my stride. But yeah, I think that's why. It just felt, everything felt kind of right about it, and I still felt a huge amount of resistance for it. But I was like, if this isn't the right time to jump through this or to try and push through it, then there won't be a better time.
And there's something, you know, useful there to, just to recognise around it being the right environment, the right space to take that risk and to take that leap. Sometimes we take the leap or we open up to the wrong people or in the wrong spaces. It's also just checking in around, hey, is this the right space for me, the right audience for me to step into?
Yeah, absolutely. And like with so many things, I can't remember what that quote is about. You needing to be in the right place to hear the lesson or whatever. I'm sure you do know what quote am I talking about.
I have no idea what quote you're talking about. Right, but okay. It sounds familiar.
There is a really great quote, which I can't remember who said it or what they actually said. But basically, the gist is you need to be in the right place to hear stuff sometimes. So you need to be in the right environment to receive a bit of learning or to, in this instance, to be well positioned to push through something because you've just got the right resources, whatever those might be.
Yeah.
You know, the space or a bit more confidence than they used to have or normally have or whatever. So the conditions are just sort of a bit more optimal than they otherwise would be.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking there around it being something that you were passionate about, that being coaching. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into coaching in the first place?
It was a bit of a weird one. I suffered from serious depression for a long time, and I still do actually, but I have learned to manage it much better. And when I say a long time, I mean sort of my whole adult life. And I became conscious of it, and it took a long time to become conscious that actually this wasn't how everyone felt and this wasn't normal and actually I should do something about this. So I eventually did that, and various doctors tried to put me on antidepressants, and I said no because I just didn't want to dice with it in that way. And I know that sometimes it is the right thing to do and the right thing for some people, but for me it just felt like something I needed to try and understand better myself before I started what I felt was sort of masking it with drugs. And it felt a little bit like my GP was just kind of going, oh, we'll just take these and it's sorted. And I was like, it feels bigger and more complex than that. So I tried a number of different therapies, like counselling and CBT and all sorts of things. And they all had a kind of, they had an impact, but it was always quite limited in time. It was never a sustained impact. And then I was on the phone to my sister one day talking about all this stuff. And she said, why don't you go and see a life coach? You've tried everything else, and this is something that could potentially help you. Why don't you try it? And I was like, all right, fair enough. And I'm glad she did challenge me on it. So I went to see this coach, and I spent 2 hours with her. And in that two-hour period, she helped me understand, or helped myself understand more about how I thought and why I thought that way than I ever had done before. And it wasn't like it switched my depression off, but it did just gave me a huge insight into my mind, which I'd never had before in any other situation. And I walked out of that session feeling lighter than air and thinking two things. One, I would have paid 10 times what I just did for that, for how I now feel and what I now understand about myself. And two, I want to be able to do that. because it felt like magic to me.
So this is really interesting, because often when we talk about coaching, we talk about not working with somebody who has depression.
Mm.
We talk about sending that person or working with that person to work with a therapist or, mm-hmm. or a counsellor. So it's interesting that you worked with a coach that really helped you create that shift.
Yeah, 100%. Far more so than any other discipline that I tried. Yeah. Not quite sure why that is. Like, I mean, it could be something to do with my own sort of personal need to kind of practically understand what's going on under the surface for me, like mind patterns and mindset and why I'm thinking the way I'm thinking. But I'm not completely sure of why that worked better than other things. It could be, I guess, thinking about it now, it could be the kind of the fact that the onus was on me to try and understand it rather than for someone else to go, this is what's wrong with you and these are the things that you should do about it, or here's what we're going to do together to sort of try and fix it. Whereas this was obviously a sort of facilitative process, as coaching should be, where I was forced for the first time to actually dig around and find out, you know, what was going on, what was firing in what direction and why.
That's really interesting, just in terms of, you know, as coaches, just being able to hold on to that thought that actually that there's a, you know, an area that we can work in, that it's okay to go there as long as the client is okay with us being in that space with them.
Yeah, I think so. And the depression one is an interesting one, because you're right, there is a lot of noise in the industry about not going, not taking on clients for that kind of serious mental illness. And I think sometimes that still can be good advice.
Yeah.
But I think also, and I'm reminded here of Nick's transformational dialogue lecture, I think sometimes we need to be a little bit careful not to define those rules too rigidly, simply because it did really help me. And I now, when clients come to me and say that they're depressed, at the beginning of my sort of coaching journey, if you like, I said, I'm really sorry, that's not something I can help you with. However, I'm happy to refer you to a therapist or whatever. Whereas now, I have a quite careful conversation with them around boundaries and contracting. But I do also share with them my experience of how it helped me. So we all sort of both go into it with our eyes open. And I think that's the key to it. I think it would be wrong of a life coach to say, I think it'd be wrong of any sort of therapist to say, I can fix your depression. But for me, what worked with it very well was kind of understanding my thought patterns and then taking actions to kind of change those thought patterns. And I'm a strong believer in that, in the way that I coach people, that you can chat about mindset and explore patterns and try and change those thought patterns for as long as you like. But for me, I see the greatest results when that then changes people's behaviours.
Yeah.
And from behaviour change comes actual change.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. And I think there's something really nice there around also the experience as a coach that you need to go into those spaces. I think there is I think if you're fresh out of coaching school and you dive into that, it could be too early for you to really know where you're going and know yourself as a practitioner as well. So I think there's something about taking time to build your coaching skill, your coaching muscle, to be able to work in those more complex or challenging areas.
Yeah, absolutely. That and what I said about contracting and both parties having the right expectations about what can and can't happen in that space.
So you worked with a coach who kind of enabled you to recognise what was going on for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So then what was the next step around that?
The next step was I started looking for somewhere to train, and I'm one of these people who will spend 3 weeks reading reviews about a camera before I actually go and spend any money on it. And I did exactly the same thing with the coaching course. I spent quite a lot of time exploring what was available, and I very nearly went with an American-based company. I actually can't remember what they were called, but they were eye-wateringly expensive. And then I became uncomfortable with the fact that they were based in the US and had a sort of satellite office here. And I was like, I just don't know that coaching is a much older industry in the US than it is here. And I'm just not sure if that disconnect is going to work. I may have been completely wrong about that, but something inside me sort of resisted it. And then I stumbled across Animas, and I called Animas. I got someone spent nearly an hour on the phone with me, answering my questions, telling me about, you know, what the course was like and how it was sort of different to other courses and all this kind of thing. And I was pretty much sold halfway through the call. I had a really good experience of that kind of making my sort of first contact with that company.
And what was your experience of being a student at Animas?
It was amazing. I mean, I sort of wish I could just sort of constantly be in training, because it is such a nice environment to be in. I think the thing that I was struck by most at the time was that the last time I'd done any sort of education, it'd been education that I had to do, that was mandatory. It was compulsory for me to go to school and sit exams and all that kind of thing. Whereas this was education that I'd chosen for myself, with nobody else's sort of suggestion or anything else. And I was really struck by how lovely it was to be in a space of people where all of us had chosen to be there to learn about coaching.
Yeah.
And that was completely unique for me and quite sort of transformative in itself. And it just created an amazing atmosphere to train in.
It sort of reminds me a little bit around how when a client chooses to take an action, and it's their choice, not somebody telling them what to do,
yeah,
how that quality, that feeling around it is just so much different.
Yeah, and as is the the sort of benefit and lasting impact of that action then on them, because it was something that they chose to do and it worked out, or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it was my experience was a very good one, and I remain amazed by the Animus community and the support that network kind of creates. And I tend to sort of, I go hot and cold with things as I have more time or less time, and so I'll be kind of sort of quite absent from that community for quite a long time, and then I'll kind of dive back into it again. And I think a lot of people do that. I think it depends on, you know, how much time you have, yeah, and how much headspace you have and all the rest of it. But it's the kind of constancy of that available support, the fact that if I do have a challenge to share or a success to share or whatever, I know that kind of community is always there. That and the ongoing availability of things like the London Lectures, well, they're not called that anymore, are they?
Animus Lectures.
The Animus Lectures. And I think the new community lecture is obviously a great idea as well, to take kind of experience from within the community. As far as I know, that's kind of unique in our industry, to have that level of community and support post-qualification.
Yeah.
And just while we're on that point, I think for me it was, and indeed I guess for anyone who is trying to transition from a full-time job into coaching, there is something there around having that availability, that network, simply because during my day job, I spend, you know, every waking hour with people who are doing something completely different. And I think it's really important to immerse yourself or surround yourself with people who are trying to do the same thing that you're doing. And I really underestimated that to begin with.
Right.
Because actually, to do all of that on your own whilst in a completely different industry is I certainly found it quite tough, quite challenging, and it became important for me to have people to talk to about this stuff, and, you know, to share those kind of challenges where you're like, I don't feel like I've got the time to kind of progress my business fast enough and all this sort of thing. I'm a naturally very impatient person, so I always want things to happen yesterday. So I found it a challenge, sort of in terms of the time it's taken for my business to develop. But the community has been invaluable in all of that.
It's one of the things we were talking about in another one of these podcasts around, you know, surrounding yourself with the support and the community that you need that's going to help you to build your practice and your business. And I recognise that, I'm not sure of what other schools do, but I'm aware that community that you get with Animus and also the other programmes that we provide to support you is a real benefit to coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's probably been the difference for me between going and doing my training and really enjoying it and possibly qualifying, but I maybe even might have not got that far, if I'm completely honest. I think that's been the difference between me doing that and actually following it through, remaining committed to it and building a business out of it. I don't think without the community I would have felt able to do that or empowered enough to do that.
So now you've built your business and you still have your other job, your mm-hmm. full-time job. Is there... Do you see coaching being the thing you do in the future, or is there something else bubbling away there?
I think at some stage it's something I would like to do full time. At the moment, I'm very busy, but I'm enjoying both, and I'm also learning a lot from both. And so I want to be a little bit careful not to sort of run away from my day job when I'm still learning a lot from it. So I'm balancing both. But yes, at some stage, I do see that as a kind of full transition, if you like.
Mm. And now that you've begun, or you've done that, the public speaking, is there room for that in what you're doing at all?
Yeah, I think there is, actually. That was another thing that I was surprised. I was very surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I was like, what have we uncovered here? Have we let some sort of beast out into the world? And for the next 2 or 3 days after that talk, I was kind of buzzing, and all I could think of was, I want to do more of that. Don't know what it was, but it was a bit like it felt like a drug, you know, standing in front of a group of people all listening to you. I really, really enjoyed it. So yeah, I think that would like to be, I would like that to be something which I do more of. And I've got a workshop coming up as well later in the year, which I've never done one before, and I was pretty terrified about that, again, because I was going to be standing in front of a group of, I mean, probably no more than 12 people in our first one, but I was pretty scared about that. And now I'm like, 12 people? Not a problem. So, yeah, it definitely has changed how I view that kind of future and thought, yeah, maybe there is room for some speaking in there.
And tell us a little bit about the workshop that you've got coming up.
So the workshop is something I am setting up with Marcus Stone of Animas fame,
yeah.
And it's based around my, I guess, the strap line for my business, which is Live Powerfully, which I've recently trademarked and I'm very excited about because it makes me feel like a grown-up to have a trademark. It's like suddenly my business is real, not just a sort of pretend business.
Well, that's, just to interrupt you there, I think there's something really interesting there about what is it that we need to do as coaches to make our business feel real?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I think when that happens, that shift, it really embeds and it makes it concrete what we're doing. I think it creates a shift in mindset and behaviour as well with coaches.
Yeah, and it felt like a hobby for me for a long time and something that was never really going to become like a real business, whereas now I feel comfortable calling it a business. And for me, I think that change was I needed to treat it like one. I needed to, and I thought, it sort of came to me one day, I was thinking, why does this not feel like a business when I really want it to? And it's because all the behaviours I was taking were creating it, were making it a hobby. So with business experience, I thought, well, what's the difference between the business that I work in during the day and the business that I'm failing or felt like I was failing to create, in the evenings? And it was that I hadn't created the kind of systems that I needed for me to have it feel like a business. Mm. I needed what I felt were business systems sitting underneath it. And processes and all that. The stuff that I build for a business every day, I needed to build some of those for myself. When I had those in place, then suddenly it began feeling more like a business.
So can you share any of those systems that you put in place?
Yeah, so for me, it just felt a little bit haphazard the way I was doing it. And I guess it's just one of those things, it's just a journey you need to go on. You need to know what feels a little bit wrong or uncomfortable, whatever, to know what you need to change. But I needed to have a process around how I planned for sessions, and obviously there's only so much planning you can do for a coaching session, but it was more the kind of piece of paper and the template for me that gave me the confidence in what I was doing than it was actually anything that I planned. So I created a template for taking notes, which I still use to this day and find immensely helpful, because it's just a place for the different things that come up. So it's a place for kind of general notes, a place for kind of actions that I've agreed with the client. On the top of the page, I have the last stuff that we talked about or stuff they might have messaged me about in between sessions. So we've got a few things to kind of pick up. So that's an important one. How I was taking notes or writing up my notes after sessions, just really boring stuff, like how I filed them and how I organized them and what I did with this stuff. And as soon as I felt like I had a process for each of those different things, I was like, okay, this begins to feel a bit more like a business and a bit less like a hobby.
Cool. And I sort of interrupted you as you were telling us about the workshop that you're doing.
Yeah. So, like I said, that's based around this strap line that I have, Live Powerfully. And the idea behind that is really about, I guess another way of putting it would be kind of living consciously. So understanding why you make decisions and about choice and self-empowerment and not just kind of being kind of buffeted through life by everybody else and other stuff and your circumstances and all that kind of thing. So I guess it's largely around identifying where you are and whether or not you're okay with that. And sometimes people, I mean, as we know from coaching, sometimes people think there's a problem and they work out a bit more about where they are and actually maybe they don't want to be over here. They're quite happy where they are. Mm. So it's about kind of beginning to sort of awaken people's consciousness around what they're doing, how they're living their lives. I think it's a peculiarly British trait to not want more.
Okay.
And to be almost embarrassed by wanting more of kind of anything, and that we should kind of just be okay with what we have and not complain and all that kind of thing, stiff upper lip. And actually it's, you know, you can want whatever you want for whatever reasons you want it. I might not always agree with those reasons, but you are, you know, a free spirit and free to make those choices. And I think that it can be very empowering sometimes for people to be given that permission to go, actually, maybe I'm not okay with what I have. and maybe I want something different, or I want more of something, or less of something, or whatever. So it's really about it's about choice and taking control of the things that you can control. I love this idea of the sphere of influence. I can't remember what book I read about it in, but this idea of what falls within my sphere of influence and I can control, and what falls outside it. And what falls outside it, obviously, you have to learn to accept, but what falls inside it, you know, you can do something about it if you want to, if you're motivated to do it. And I think a lot of the time, I see this a lot with my clients, they're doing, you know, let's say there are 8 things inside their sphere of influence and they might be doing something about 2 or 3 of them.
Right.
And I think that's a really powerful realization. Obviously involves a little bit of challenge with people, as you say, what if you can do something about that? Well, I can't because of this. And you go, well, what if you can? And so, yeah, the whole Live Powerfully thing is a workshop is going to be a series of a kind of experiential workshop, if you like, around and exploring some of those kind of exercises which begin to look at those different themes.
Awesome. Brilliant.
It's very exciting.
Well, it's been really exciting and wonderful talking with you today. And I'm just curious, you know, somebody wants to get hold of you in terms of coaching or taking part in one of your workshops or offering you a speaking gig. how do they get hold of you?
So I've got a website, which is willharvey.life. And I'm on Facebook, so you can find me there. I do not yet have a YouTube channel because that seems like a step too far through my fear, but we'll get there at some stage. But yeah, through my website or by email, which is will@willharvey.life. So that's how you can find me.
Brilliant. Thank you. It's been a great pleasure talking with you, Will.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.